This is a speaker meeting tonight, and we've got Bobby from Merlin with 29 years.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bobby. I'm an addict. Glad to be in another meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. That always works. Jay asked me if I was nervous, and I was going, no, but you should have seen me about a week ago. And that's not true. What happens is that I've got the disease of addiction, and it's alive and well today, let me tell you. The only difference is that today I'm in recovery, and so what I've learned how to do is do things a little bit different. The first is learn how not to pick up. So, you know what? On the way over here, I was thinking, we were having a great meeting on the way over here. And for those of you who don't know it, I bribed all these people to come over here and support me, which is not true. It's not true. What it is, it's the miracle of what happens in Narcotics Anonymous when you stick around for a while and you become transparent and you allow people to be able to do those things that I never expected when I got here. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't... I had no idea, you know. It's like I didn't want to quit, first of all. So it was about the power of the disease that even though, you know, it brought me down to my knees, what happened was that I still had the desire to deal with all my fears through the use of drugs. And so, let me start from the beginning. In the beginning, my addiction started probably the day that I was born. I look back at my behaviors in the very beginning, and thank God for the four-step to help me identify that. Thank God for the people that were in meetings that shared their experience, strength, and hope to allow me to be able to start beginning to look for the similarities and not the differences. Because I spent a lot of time in Narcotics Anonymous in the very beginning trying to be different than everybody else. And it kind of like reflects what my early childhood was all about as well. I was born in Porterville, California, and my dad was a farmer, pretty successful farmer at that time, and my mother, he was a full-blooded Filipino, and he had married a lady from Texas who was my mom, and I didn't know in the early days how difficult that was at that time because mixed marriages were not looked upon very well. As a matter of fact, it's funny that I end up in Oregon because he had to bring her here to get married because they wouldn't allow it in the county in California where he was born. I mean, where he was living. And so, right off the bat, I already had an excuse to look for differences because I felt different. And so, and that prevailed for a long, long time. I brought that into recovery. And sometimes I still go there, you know, but what I know is that, some of the things I've learned since I've been here that I learned how to apply in recovery, are things that I continue to do today that gets me through that. So I'm this kid who's pretty happy, until about 6 years old, and about 6 years old, next thing I know, my mother's gone, and I don't know why. And so I'm asking a lot of questions, you know, what happened to Mom? You know, what happened to Mom? And what happened was that I got the opportunity to be able to learn how to lie really quick because people would not explain that to me. And they used to joke about it, and it confused me. And with that confusion, I got to a point where I didn't understand. And then there was a point in time where I started beginning to become a victim because I thought it was my fault. Because I'd go to school and all these kids had parents that I didn't have one. I only had one. And so I didn't know at the time what that was going to lead me down to in terms of like my perception of abandonment, my perception around how I deal with relationships with women. That only came out after I came into the program and started working the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And then I began to believe what I know today, and that is the disease of addiction is not just about the use of drugs. It's really about the behaviors the belief systems and those kinds of things that have kind of driven my whole life. And but, you know, the good side of that is that the program has given me an opportunity to be able to look at that, discover that, discard what I needed to, and be able to move forward with a new way of life. And I'll talk about that. I was having a conversation over here with Francois and Jen, right? And, you know, I was going, God, all these things that they're talking about, I probably need to share a little bit about that, right? But I'll try and stay on track here a little bit and try and cover as much as I can. I was sharing with them that the first time that, maybe the second time that I got to share in a meeting where I was asked to share the meeting as a speaker meeting, I got up and I spoke for about 15 minutes and my mind went blank. I hope that didn't happen today, but my mind went blank and I didn't know what to do. But you know what it is? The addict in me came out and I was going, okay, I got a choice here. I can either lie, right? Or what I can do is tell the truth. And probably for the second time in my life, I actually told the truth. I told him and became vulnerable and said, you know, I don't know of anything more to say. And as God would have it, what happened was that Narcotics Anonymous survived without me. It was like somebody stood up and spoke for 45 minutes right after me, so it worked out, right? And that's kind of the way that my recovery has been the whole time I've ever been in recovery. So anyway, getting back to being younger, I got abandoned by my mom. I thought, see, I'm already still into that type of thinking, right? And so what I did is I started relying on my dad. You know, that was the only source of information I had. My dad had a great set of principles, you know. He was a man who came from the Philippines in the 1920s, couldn't speak English, put himself through junior college in San Francisco. When he got off the boat, learned how to speak English, and became this kind of icon, not only in my eyes, but also in most of the people that he had relationships with. So he became this mentor that I really wanted to be like. But at some point in time, being the addict that I am, what happened was I got a resentment, and that resentment pervaded in my life for a long, long time. And I'll get to that. I'll get to what the resentment was about. But it was, here I am as a 6, 7-year-old kid, and I'm with my dad, and I'm relying on my dad, and I'm you know, he's like doing this farming thing, and I'm trying to, you know, mentor what he's doing, and he's giving me these lessons about the value in being, in working hard and overcoming obstacles and that type of thing. And but he wasn't a complainer. He never complained about anything. I was just the opposite. I complained about everything, right? Because what happened was I became a king baby, man. It's like he coddled me, and he did all these things for me, whatever I asked for, he gave to me, right? And it was like, the only thing that he didn't give to me sometimes was the truth. Because silence was golden. And it was like, whenever I'd ask questions or whatever, he would choose the answers he wanted. If he didn't want to answer them, that was okay too. Little did I know as I was going to be just like him later on, you know, and, but in a bad way, not in a good way, right? And so, I guess he got lonely, because after about 4 years, he decided that he wanted to have companionship with another female. And so he decided he was going to pack up his clothes and go to the Philippine Islands and find himself this new wife that he was going to be looking for. So, you know, when it was explained to me in the beginning, I thought, wow, great, man, I get to get a new mom, right? And he was gone for a long period of time. He had probably been gone for probably about 3 years. What he did is he ended up leaving me with his brother and his wife. And that was the beginning of a horror story for me. Not only in the way that I thought, but also in the way that I was being treated. And, you know, I had to learn some self-defense skills really early on. And I didn't understand it all. I didn't understand it all, you know, but, you know, I was so used to these things being given to me that that I set those expectations on that. And speaking of that, I hope your expectations aren't too high, because mine are not. Okay. I learned that when I set those kinds of expectations, what happens is I get disappointed. So during that period of time, I got disappointed a lot. And what I did with that disappointment was I started turning it around early on. This is before I ever had a drug in my system, right? What I did is I started getting hateful and angry. You know, I had an aunt who would beat me all the time. And she was just an angry, angry woman. And I never understood why she did that. So I figured, if I'm going to get a beating, then I just need to continue to be that, right? But I never had the courage to be able to stand up to her. Are you getting kind of the foundation of, like, what my relationship with females is like? In the beginning, it's like I'm setting up all these barriers or these roadblocks around being able to have an intimate relationship with a woman. And that continued on until I got into Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm just embracing it, okay? Because there's a sad part to that, but there's a really good part to it, too. Good parts, I got through it. I got here, you know. So anyway, he comes back after 3 years, and I'm a happy camper, man. I couldn't wait to get to the boat to watch them both get off the boat. And I remember I'm waving at my dad, and I can't wait for him to come down the plank, right? And there's this beautiful woman sitting next to him. And I didn't know that wasn't going to be my stepmom, but I just was glad that he was back so I could be back with him and safe again. And boy, what a surprise that was going to be. See, what I didn't know was that when he married her, he didn't tell him that he had two other children back in the United States and that he had been married before. So here she comes 3,500 miles across the ocean, or 6,000, or however many it is, and she's getting the news broken to her up there while she's waving down at me. So she was not a happy camper when she got off that boat. And that proceeded to go into a relationship that was very, very, very precarious for many, many years after that. It was a learning process for me. But see, I already built these walls around relationships with women, and it just kind of reinforced what I was going to receive from another woman that would come into my life. I didn't realize until I got into Narcotics Anonymous about how difficult it must have been for her to be able to get that kind of news, not have an option of where to go, right? And so what she did, she got angry. And a lot of that anger was taken out on us. But what I didn't realize is that until after I took a fourth step was that she did the best job that she could. In the end, and I'll get to that part too, she was there for us, me and my sister, the whole time. Even through her own anger and the beatings that we used to get from her, she endured. I learned something about loyalty. I learned that word for the first time when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. See, that's what this is all about for me. It's about the loyalty of the friends that you gain here in Narcotics Anonymous that will be there for you if you learn how to take your old belief systems, take the good out of it, take the bad out, and discard it. And so, so anyway, I was sharing the other day with a friend of mine about the situation that just currently happened to me when I came out of California. I never knew how to stand up to anyone, you know. My courage always came from being afraid, right? And so imagine being a 13-year-old kid. I'm a 13-year-old kid, and one day she's pissed off at me, and so what she does, she picks up one of those, I don't know if you guys remember this from the 50s, but remember those old dust mops that used to have the curled iron on the inside of them, and they had the mop hanging down from him. Well, she smacked me over the top of the head and split my head open. And I remember seeing blood coming down my face. And for for the first time in my life, I picked up my hand and I smacked her. And I smacked her again. And then something happened. It was, I think it was maybe the shame or the guilt of me being able to do that, right? My knees turned to jelly and I had to catch myself from falling down. And so, but it gave me a sense of power. I thought that, man, you know what? There's the answer, man. The answer is that you don't ever have to feel this way. If you feel this way, then maybe what you ought to do is just keep doing it, because let other people feel how you feel. And that's where my life went from that point on. I can tell you some horror stories about things that I did to people when I was angry. But, you know, I think we all have similar experiences around that. And I'm not proud of it today, but I have a program that allows me to be able to put all of that to the side and start acting like a different kind of human being when you get an opportunity. And one thing that I came in Narcotics Anonymous was that I learned how to be a victim, and I set myself up a lot to be that victim, and I played that role very well. And so fast forward, right, I probably started smoking when I was probably, I actually had my first drink when I was about 7. My uncle gave that to me at a party that we were at, and I remember thinking about how horrible it tasted, but about 30 seconds later, I remember how good it made me feel. And I found another power, right? This power that allowed me to be able to want to be like them. I just wanted to be like them. And if they drank it, I wanted to drink too. I didn't care what it tasted like. But I loved the way that it made me feel. And I took off. My addiction took off as far as drugs were concerned. I would steal alcohol from my parents. My parents eventually, my dad became a farmer. They eventually, the market fell out on the farming. And for about 7 years, we were really, really poor. I went from being the spoiled kid that was right up on a tractor with his dad to, next thing I knew, I had a bag and I was picking oranges out in the field, and I couldn't understand it because I had the sense of entitlement that told me I needed something better than this man. So I thought my dad was a failure, man, and I started pointing fingers at him, right? Because every time I'd break a sweat or my back would hurt, I'd go, it's his fault, man. It's his fault that I'm here doing this. What I didn't know was that, just like what I learned in the program of recovery, is that what he was doing is that I was getting a lesson on how to overcome. And I didn't know that. Shortly after that, him and my stepmom opened up a little mom and pop store. They began selling some of the oranges that they would throw away in the field to people that were, we lived right on a highway that led right up into Sequoia National Park. And so there were a lot of out-of-state people that would come by, and they loved fresh orange juice, and we'd squeeze orange juice as a start. That began into, like, the next person came by needed a carton of milk, and so they bought a refrigerator and put milk in it. Next thing I know, she's got a drive-in restaurant, and he's got a market that he's selling gas and these condiments from, and so things started getting a little bit better again, right? And so I started having a little bit more confidence in him. But my addiction had already taken off. By then I was stealing alcohol, drinking it in the ice box where we stored the alcohol during the day, trying to hide it and get caught. My dad would beat me, but it didn't stop me from continuing to do what I did. And that was like I became another kind of a human being, man. You know, I was okay with me. It didn't matter that she was beating on me or whatever. I could always drink and smoke pot or whatever, and it would go away. You know, it put me into a different world. You know, yesterday I'm recording these CDs because I'm giving away these CDs to this friend of mine, and I happened to turn on the TV, and on the TV was the 60s and 70s music, right? And I remembered how there was a period of time during that time where I loved music, man. I just loved. I thought I was the best singer in the world when it came to singing, because I'd sing right along, you know. And of course, my wife today tells me, "Why don't you shut up?" Thank God the voice I had back. But anyway, there was good times too, you know what I mean? So my addiction, I think, just took this kind of slow turn. That's what took me so long to get here. I was 46 years old when I walked into the first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And there was a lot of stuff that had to happen in between, you know? I was sharing with Katie and them that, let me talk about disappointment. I'll tell you a little bit about this. I'm in high school and I'm growing up with these guys. There's four of us that are growing up together, right? And we're like that, tight, right? We all drank, we all did drugs, right? We loved rock and roll and driving fast cars and all that. And we were kind of committed to each other in terms of like loyalty, right? So we're getting ready to graduate out of high school and out of high school, we're going to go into the Marine Corps and join the Marine Corps together as a group, right? And so, during the summers, what I used to do is I used to go over and visit my real mom, and spend the summers with her. And so the summer out of high school, I go over there and, by the way, my mom's was an alcoholic too as well. And, it was good. It's good to be there, man. You know, every time I was with mom, man, we had a fifth that we would share, and it was like, I loved spending summers there. And so, I come back that summer, at the end of that summer, and, my three friends had joined the Marine Corps without me. Another resentment, man. I had a huge resentment. You know? And it's funny how God works, man. It's like, to be directly opposite of them, what I did is I joined the Marine Corps so I could laugh at the Marines, right? I mean, I'm sorry, I joined the Navy and so I could laugh at the Marines. Still have the wish, but I developed these resentments along the way, right? And one more time, I'm getting abandoned by somebody else, right? So it's driving that deep feeling of, like, you're not worthwhile, man. You really are not. Otherwise, they would have stayed with you and waited with you, right? So I knew how to resolve that, man. I never got close to anybody after that. Screw you. Shortly after the end of my tour in the Navy, I volunteered to go to Vietnam, and I found out that it's definitely not a good idea to get close to anybody. It really is not. Here's the blessing. The blessing is that I came back from Vietnam. The second blessing was that everybody that was in that platoon with my buddies, you were killed or wounded. So, what did that do for me? What that did for me was I came back a very changed person. You know, I was it was really important for me to stay loaded the whole time I was over there. It was very important for me to be able to make decisions that I really wasn't willing to make, but I'd given myself permission to because I've been practicing it for a long time. But yet somewhere in the back of my mind, there was this sense of, this is wrong, man. This is wrong. And then I had to decide between trying to stay alive and determining whether or not what I was doing was wrong or not. And so what I did was that when I came back, I was in full-blown addiction. I hit the Haight-Ashbury on my first day back from leave and knew that what I needed to do is I need to blend in, right? And so I jumped in full force. 3 days after I got back, I was discharged out of the Navy, and I was so angry. What I did was I took a taxi off of Treasure Island in San Francisco and made the taxi driver stop in the middle of the Bay Bridge. And he said, I can't stop in the middle of Bay Bridge. It's a ticket. So I took out a knife and I stuck it in his neck and I said, if you don't stop right now, I'm going to stick you. And that's how insane I was, you know. And he stopped. I took my sea bag and I dumped it off the end of the Bay Bridge. One of the things that they told me when I was being discharged was that you have 2 more years of reserve duty to serve. And I said, come. F and find me. Yeah, come and find me. And so, now the next 3 years of my life in the Bay Area, I immersed myself in as much drugs as possible. I couldn't. There was days where I would go, I'm not even sure if I'm still loaded or not. I'd taken LSD every day, psilocybin. It was like everything that you could imagine because I couldn't get loaded enough. I couldn't stop those feelings and type of things that I had going on. And so what I did is I did the first time in my life tried to attempt to stop using. And I did this geographic. I thought if I do this geographic, things will change, right? And I can start controlling what I'm doing. So I moved back home to Mom's house, of course, Mom and Dad's house, and enrolled in college, went on under the GI Bill. You know, it was pretty stable for about the first 3 months, and then I got invited to go smoke a doobie with somebody, and it was back on again, man. But I was controlling it this time, right? I'd only do it on the weekends. And, you know, that sense of, like, space between times getting loaded was probably really good for me because I had maybe some moments of clarity, right? But yet I couldn't stop, right? And I say this today. I know today that there was a point in time, and I don't know when that was, where I crossed the line. And when I crossed the line, it wasn't a matter of a choice anymore. I had to be loaded all the time. And so so here's this period of time where I go back to school, and while I'm in college, I look at an ad in the newspaper, and there's this ad for a karate instructor. You want to be a karate instructor? I thought, that's perfectly what I need, man. I need to get into some kind of physical fitness kind of thing and do that. And I answer the ad. And what happens is there's this the guy who teaches six of us, and then his plan was he's going to open six more schools, and we were going to be the nucleus of those schools. And anyway, so I trained for like 3 months, and I start trying to control my drinking and my using again one more time. I didn't stop completely, right? Only a six pack, right? This time, only one joint this time. Maybe I'll, you know, get some LSD on the weekend, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, there was a sense of, I was beginning to feel good about how I was feeling. My confidence really soared. Shortly after that, that instructor ended up taking off leaving, and we had four karate schools that were open, and so I became manager of those karate schools, and I, even as a lower belt, had this tremendous amount of confidence. I thought I was a black belt, and I acted as if I was one. And I found out that there's a sense of power behind that, too. And so I did that for a while. But everything that I ever did in my life prior to getting to Narcotics Anonymous was a great start and a flat finish, right? I have a friend of mine in the program that says, you know what we are as addicts? We're great 50-yard dashers. And I understand what that means. I'm great at starting stuff, right? But I never could finish it. I'm happy to say that, you know, I continued on in the martial arts, even into recovery. But what happened to me is I got physically sick and then eventually moved away from it. I still participate with those people that I end up promoting, and you know, and they look up to me as a mentor, and I try and not disappoint them. I just try and show up, even though I physically can't do what I used to do before. There's a period of time during the time that I'm running these karate schools, and what's happening is that I end up meeting this girl. By the way, let me back up a little bit. While I'm in college, right, I meet this girl who I fall in love with. I mean, literally fall in love. She is, I did anything for her. She was the best thing that ever happened to me. So we have this relationship going on for 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, I think it's time for me to man up, man. And so I go to her house down where her parents are at in Manhattan Beach in California. And I propose to her, right? And she doesn't answer me. She didn't say yes or no, but I'm happy, man, just because she heard me say it, right? And I got past the fear of asking her. And so her parents are very approval of me, and they approved me. Her dad was a liquor salesman, by the way. And so So, you know, my drinking and using really didn't bother him too much. But that night, she's invited to a bachelorette party. And she goes to this bachelorette party, and she disappears. So 2-3 days later, I'm calling every day, right, calling, where are you? Hey, I missed you, right? And come to find out that she took off with one of the strippers and married him in Vegas that night. One night, right? Nice man. It devastated me. I got drunk. I drove home to Porterville. I drove up to my dad's. I was crying like a baby and asking him for help. What do I do? And he said, I don't know what to tell you. And so what I did is I left there. I drove up into Marin County where I'd been before. I went out on the bluffs in Marin County, and I was sitting there with a fifth in this hand. I had just snorted a whole bunch of cocaine, and jumping off that cliff seemed to be a good idea. Because I remember being there before. I would go out there and I'd drink out there and you know, smoke pot and stuff. And I remember down below was a bunch of rocks, and I knew it was going to be quick. And so for the first time in my life, I got so down, I thought it was a good thing to take my life, and I jumped. And I'm here today, guys. It didn't happen. What happened was there was a piece of sand down there about as wide as my body, and I landed on that piece of sand on my back, and it knocked the air out of me. And I remember coming to and going, see what a F up you are, man. You can't even do this right, right? And so I guess I was meant to live. So I would, you know, whenever you get to those questionnaires that they ask you in those companies, right, did you ever try and take your life? I'm going, yeah, not very successful. Right? And so, but anyway, you would have thought that would have brought me to a bottom, right? But it didn't. I had to continue on. Enough of what it was like, right? I'm sitting at the door of this house that I bought, and the wife who I met through the karate schools, right? I went on a blind date with her, and we kept dating after that. Anyway, at one point in time, I ended up marrying her, and the relationship had gone to pot because of my self-centeredness drove everything that I did, and she was secondary. I treated her like she was useless because I knew that at some point in time she was going to abandon me too. And so what I did is I used her, and so she's giving me these ultimatums, right? See, you better quit. If you don't quit using drugs, I'm leaving. Don't let the door hit you in the ass, man. See ya. Right? More drugs for me, man. Right? One day she just ended up quit using. She just said, that's it, I'm done. And from that point on, she wanted me to quit. And I said, don't let the door hit you in the ass. So the next thing I know is her mom's driving over from Arizona, and they're there and they're packing up, and my two daughters by then are there too with them, and I had another moment of clarity. It was for the first time in my life I finally realized that once I got past that, oh, I'm a victim here, right? I'm being abandoned again. Is that the reality of the loneliness of being alone kind of set in? Second thing that set that off was my two daughters were looking up at me. And I used to say this when I shared before. I thought that at that time what my daughter, and I'm loaded by the way, my daughters had said to me, right, why can't you stop using? Why are we having to leave? Right? And what I know today, after many years of recovery and really reevaluating that and looking at it, is that I was in delusion. What happened was that was my own head going off, going, you know what? You're abandoning your kids, man. See? You're a failure one more time, man. Right? And so shortly after that, I got a visit from two narcs who knew that I was buying from this major dealer they were trying to bust. They were trying to get me to roll over on him. And they were telling me, man, Bobby, you got this great job, right? What's wrong with you? It's like, they were asking me how big my habit was. Of course, I lied back then, too. Oh, it's huge, man. I'm doing an ounce a day. You know, it was like, yeah, but I didn't know that that was another angel from God. God was sending me a message, man, that, hey, turn your life around, man. You can turn your life around. There's, I mean, these are the narcs. They're caring about me, right? Of course, I didn't think that way about them then. But what happened was that it got my attention, right? And so I go to work, and at work, by then I'm using every day at work, too, as well. You know, I'm almost getting caught every time, too. You know, I'm leaving bags of used cocaine around. There's lines I haven't blown off the toilet seat yet. It's like, I mean, you know, doing those things that we do, right? And I'm selling, by the way, at work in order to be able to keep my habit going, too. And so I see the sign up on the wall, and it says, you have a drug problem? Right? And I thought, well, you know what? I need to get the heat off my back, man. I can get her to come back, right? Maybe I can get the narcs off me, too, if I just try and maybe make a call to this number. I made a call, and what they did is they put me in a rehab. They gave me two options. One is you can do an outpatient or you can do an inpatient, right? I said, I'll take the outpatient, right? And they're going, no, you need the inpatient. You're so much in denial. So for 28 days, I sit in this inpatient program. And that's where I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. The other program, too, as well. But the one that got my attention was Narcotics Anonymous. Because I was hearing something, man. You know, I'm starting to get clean. The body's starting to clear out a little bit. A little bit of the fog's leaving out of my head. And I'm hearing something, man. I'm hearing that there's a different way to live, man. And not that I wanted that. I said, well, good for them, man. I'm glad it works for them. When I get out of here, I'm getting loaded again. That's where you know how the obsession goes. It's like, and we all know that the committees keep going on and on and on and on. It's like the committees are working, man. Yeah. Wait till I get out. I got these three paychecks waiting for me, right? I can go take that gun out of Hawk. And, I got all these plans and stuff, right? But the guy who was eventually my first sponsor opened the door for me. You know, I heard him share. He was sharing my story. He was talking about his denial. He was talking about being in the service at the same branch of service. I mean, I started identifying. And the magic of Narcotics Anonymous started to work. And so I get out of there. 3 days after I'm out of there, I'm loaded again. The only difference is I now have a little bit of information about the hope that's being presented in Narcotics Anonymous. Even though I wasn't paying attention to meetings, I was looking for the differences. Somehow or another, every time I left a meeting or an H&I panel would come in, I'd feel a little bit better. It was that hope that was starting to light a candle inside of me. And I was hooked from that point on. Because I got loaded. As soon as I got loaded, the very first hit I took off that pipe again when I was smoking that crack cocaine, the end for me was the reason I was in that rehab is because I was having a seizure every time I took a hit off that pipe. Didn't matter. If I waited 3 days and got loaded again, didn't matter. I was back in a seizure again. And in the rehab, I learned what was happening is my body was shutting down. I hadn't gone to the bathroom in I don't know how long. I probably hadn't taken a dump in 2 weeks. And I can't remember the last time I took a piss. What's more, a shower, right? And but what happened was I took that first hit when I got out. And I went into seizure again. And I came to out of the seizure. And the first words that came out of my mouth was something I heard in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It's a progressive disease. It's not going to change. It's going to get worse. And I was going, fuck. Come on, right? But really, I was feeling is this tremendous amount of fear, man. I was so afraid about how am I going to live life without the use of drugs, right? And here's what I did. Instead of trying to save my face instead of my ass, what I did is I kept going to meetings. Because I didn't want you guys to know that I got loaded, man. So I went there and I kept picking up chips, right? 3 days later, I'm loaded again, in a seizure again, right? Can't even finish it, and I'm going, man, I'm screwed, right? And I did that for almost 90 days. I was going to a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous to pick up a 90-day chip, and I hadn't been loaded the day before, but I went there because I didn't want you guys to know I got loaded. And as God would have it, he puts next to me somebody else who would relapse. And in that meeting, they used to give out chips at the end of the meeting. And so the meeting went on. And at the end of the meeting, is that they asked for a burning desire. And this kid jumps up, right? Oh, I went back out. You could tell he went back out. He was still shaking and, you know, in detox. And I looked up at him. And I'll never want to forget this, right? I thought to myself, man, that kid's got courage, man. See, I've watched that happen while I was in meetings in Narcotics Anonymous before. Somehow or another, this day was different. In the back of my mind, I was going, man, what courage he had, and what a coward you are, Bobby. And then what I did, I went back and I started thinking about what those last 90 days were like. And I tell you that I never, ever want to feel like that again. That ended up being my bottom. And somehow or another, something told me to stand up, and I stood up, and I said, my name's Bobby, I'm an addict, and I relapsed too. And then I did something I hadn't done in a long, long time. Long, long time. Not since I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. I broke down, and I started crying, and I couldn't stop crying. Because I was balancing myself between these two feelings. Right? You're a failure, right? But there's still hope, man. You're a failure, but there's still hope. That day was August 6th of 1988, and I haven't had to pick up since.
Right.
And thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for those who were here before me. Thank you to those people that had the courage to be able to say, I'm an addict. Thank you for those people that allowed me to be able to find honesty in myself. Remember I told you that was the second time I'd ever been honest? That was the first time I ever got honest. Not with you, but with me. Right? And it made me feel like a failure, and then there was this hope. What I did is I took that hope, and what happened shortly after that, because after the meeting was over with, there was not a person in that meeting that didn't walk up to me, give me a hug, and tell me, thank you very much for sharing that. Keep coming back. It gets better. We know how you're feeling. We've done that too, right? Not a person in that meeting didn't stop by and give me a hug. And for the first time, I found the unconditional love that's here in Narcotics Anonymous. You know that little kid that was so disappointed when his mom left? Found home, man. I found home. And the thing that I was least looking for in Narcotics Anonymous happened that day. Not only did I get the freedom from active addiction, but I also got the opportunity to be able to find out what the reward of is staying clean. See, all those times, I remember being a 7-year-old inside of a closet in my bedroom, and I'm curled up in a fetal position because of something that physical that just happened to me that I needed some help from. And I remember asking God for help. Please, please help me. And I thought at the time he didn't show up. What I didn't know was he was just saying, wait a minute, you need to go through some more before I'll be available for you. Because that's what it's going to take to get your attention. So what I did on that day, and I found this out by working the second and third step, is that that was the day I abandoned my belief in a higher power. Okay. If you're not going to be there, then I guess I must be there for me, and I'm the only one that can help me. And my self-centeredness took off. From that point, I was God. Every decision I made was about me, you know. And when I got disappointed, what I would do is I'd take care of me. Give me more drugs, right? So, after that surrender, shortly after that, I asked that sponsor of mine to sponsor me. His name was Art C. Art had 44 years clean He passed away about 5 years ago. And I used to call him every year that I would take the chip. He knew I was Filipino. He goes, "Are you still eating that pork?" By the way, he was Jewish, right? "Are you still eating that pork?" And I'd be going, "Yeah, all right, I still am, right? I'm working on that, all right? I'm working on that." But anyway, I was able to be able to attend his funeral, and at about a year and a half clean, after working the first five steps with me, what he did was he kicked me loose. He lived in a town 60 miles away, and he knew that what I needed was a sponsor in the town that I lived in, so I had somebody close to be with. And what happened was that he told me, "You need to get another sponsor." And back in those days when we got sponsored, I don't know about you guys, but if you have that much clean time or close to it, you probably had a sponsor that was not very nice. I picked the meanest one there was, right? And in no uncertain terms, he did it in a way that it was not gentle, right? "That's it, buddy. You and I are done. Go find somebody else." Not all you. Gave me another resentment, right? I was going, "One more time, I'm getting abandoned again, right?" See, what I didn't know was something I've learned here in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. This program is really about practice. It's about here. I'm going to give you a problem, walk through it, and guess what? You ain't done, okay? You need to practice the spiritual principles over and over and over again. See, because I had 46 years of life where I reacted rather than responded. I needed to learn how to respond. Sometimes wait just a minute, right? I learned how to do that with the use of drugs. It's just wait a minute. It's okay for you to want to use, but just wait a minute, right? Do it tomorrow, right? And what I've learned is that's the most valuable lesson I ever got. So anyway, I get down to the area I live in. I get another sponsor, and him and I have a really tight relationship for about 6 years. And then one day he decides he's going to become a truck driver, right? And so we're talking back and forth on the phone, and he's telling me he's making meetings out of town. And one day he comes back into town, and he got loaded. And once more time, I'm disappointed. But I learned something from that. See, I was going, "Oh, man, I'm not getting close to anybody again, man, because I can't deal with this kind of pain anymore." What I learned is that I could walk through that pain. And if I was patient enough, what would happen was exactly what was supposed to happen, right? And so there's about five of us that he's sponsoring, and we're all getting together. We're all grieving on each other's shoulders, going, "Now what, right? What are we going to do now, man?" So I don't know. I don't know anybody in the program I want to sponsor me, right? So we look at each other and we go, "Well, why don't we sponsor each other, man? I'll call you whenever," right? And today I still have that same sponsor. You know, and here it is 20-some-odd years later. And we are... Sponsorship is the heart of this program. I really, truly believe that. I've allowed myself to be able to deal with a human being that if I have the trust and the faith, what happens is he's going to be there for me. Him and I have been working together for a few years, and I got this daughter who I'm making an amends to. She's graduating out of high school, and next thing I come home one day, and my wife's trying to avoid me. I'm walking into the room. I'm trying to fall around. She's trying to avoid me. I look at my daughter, and she can't look at me in the eyes. She's looking down. And, something's going on here, right? I got it, man. Something's going on here. What are you guys trying to hide from me, right? And this goes to show you the depth of my disease, right? What happened was that they finally broke down, and my wife sat down with me and my daughter, and she told me that my daughter was pregnant. And I was heartbroken, man. I was just, I felt powerless. I mean, the ultimate feeling of powerlessness. And I, so what does Bobby do when he's afraid? Jump up. You got to be Superman, man. You got to save the world, right? So I'm taking over. Okay. Hold it. Okay. So here's what's got to happen, right? Here's the solution. Solution is that, look, you're getting ready to graduate out of high school. Your college is in front of you, right? Get an abortion. That's it. That's the thing that you need to do, right? The second thought that came into my mind was, maybe I ought to call your sponsor, man. And so I called my sponsor, right? And he told me, where's the keys to your car? Get in it, drive over to my house right now. Don't stop, don't say anything to anybody. Drive to my house now. And so I did. I drove over to his house. And him and his wife are both in recovery. And I trust her explicitly because she's got almost as much time as I do. But anyway, I'm explaining to him, and I'm crying like a baby because I ain't got no power to change it. What am I supposed to do? And I'm telling him about this idea. And then he looks over at me and he says to me, "Bobby, you don't have the right to tell your daughter to get an abortion." And so again, one more time, trying to delay the reaction works, right? And then what happens is the best part of the miracles that happen in Narcotics Anonymous. His wife is overhearing the whole conversation. Her name's Jerry, by the way. And she goes, "Do you mind if I say something to Bobby?" And my sponsor goes, "Oh yeah, go ahead, go ahead." And she goes, "Bobby," she goes, "you know what? I was pregnant at 16, you know? And I was afraid to tell my dad too. And then when I told my dad, you know what? I wish my dad would have said to me." I said, "What is that, Jerry? Right? That I need your support and I'm afraid. That I'll be there for you." And one more time, delaying that decision to say that to my daughter, stepped in. I had a solution. All I had to do was follow some of the tools that were being provided to me by Narcotics Anonymous. And so I left there with a sense of, I've got a solution, man. All I needed to do is just admit how powerless I was by picking up the phone and calling my sponsor. And what happened was happened, what was supposed to have happened. So I got an opportunity to be able to do that. Fast forward a little bit, okay? That granddaughter gets born. And she's about 7 years old. She doesn't know that I'm an addict. She knows I go to me, but she doesn't know that I'm an addict. We're out on the lake, and she's playing on the lake. She comes back in. I'm taking some time off away from it. And I'm inside the truck reading my basic text. She walks into the truck and says, "Hey, Papa, what is that you're reading, right?" And I popped it up, showed her the blue basic text, and said, "The basic text of Narcotics Anonymous." And her eyes started getting a little bit bigger. She goes, "What does that mean, Papa?" I said, "I'm an addict." And their eyes got really big. She goes, "You're a drug addict." And I said, "Yeah, I am. I am. I'm a recovering drug addict." And she went to the next birthday meeting of mine and gave me my chip. It gets better, guys. That's a great granddaughter, or that granddaughter of mine, about, I want to say 8 weeks ago, had my great grandson. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I would have missed it all. I would have missed it all. All I had to do was just stay in denial, not surrender, and I would have missed it all. I was there when that baby was born. All those things that I ever did to my children, I get a second opportunity to be able to do with my grandchildren. I've got four grandchildren, two boys and two girls. I want to tell you that, you know what, sometimes with 29 years clean, what I do is I have a tendency to look up at myself and go, "Man, what a miracle you are, right? God, look how good you are." That's good in some ways. In other ways, it's not, okay? Because what I learned, and I learned this in the fourth, fifth step, and sixth and seventh as well, is that throughout my whole years of growing up and in my addiction, what I never allowed myself to do is to be a human being. See, I never allowed myself to be able to make mistakes. And I didn't only allow you to beat me up with that, with some of the things that you did to me, but I allowed myself to be able to beat myself up. And that continues today in Narcotics Anonymous. The only difference is that relationship that I have with a higher power that I found here is much stronger. So that's what I do, is I reach out to that. That's what I did this morning. I did that this morning. I had this conversation with a God of my understanding. And what does he do? He makes me open the Just for Today today. And what does it talk about? It talks about communicating and how I'm responsible for that. And so, I've always been taken care of. I try and tell my sponsees that this is what I've learned about all those fears that I have. And that's what I was trying to share with Jay, is that I'm still fearful, but what I do with it is different than what I normally do with it. You know, what I do with it is that I move over and I invite in a power greater than myself as a way to be able to ease the fear. I think I'll always be afraid. The only difference is that most of the stuff that I've ever been afraid of, almost 100% of whatever I've been afraid of, has never come true. So if I look through and get through it, right, what happens is at the other end, just like with my granddaughter, if I wait till the end, what happens is I have something I can take now as experience, put it into a savings account, and remember that it's there. Because the next time that I get afraid, what I do is I reach in there and I grab it. Sometimes I'm pretty good at that. Most recently, I have not been. And I need to share this with you because I'm transparent. I try and be as transparent and human as possible. I go down to California to spend the Thanksgiving weekend with my daughter. The reason I'm down there, and it's so important for me to be there, is because 2 or 3 weeks before that, I get a telephone call from her telling me that my youngest granddaughter, her daughter, who's 9 years old, is threatening her life. Not my daughter's own life, but her mother's life. And see, the God of my understanding does good things for me today. What he does is he separates me by 600 miles because I don't know what I would have done had I been there hearing that same information. Because what happens immediately is this tremendous amount of fear comes into me, and I had no program, okay, once that fear had set that deep into me. And so my first instinct is that I have to protect my sibling, man. But it's my granddaughter who's doing that. How do you do that? And then I got grateful because I had this opportunity to wait just a minute, call a few people, tell them what was going on, and them reassuring me that I would make the right decision at the right time. And so what I did, I waited. I waited 3 weeks, and I went ended up going back down to there with the intention of trying to help her out. I'm just going to be there. I just want to be there to be supportive of you, right? You never ever think it was going to go beyond that, right? And so I get there, and I'm finding out that my granddaughter is suffering from OCD or something similar to that. And she's being treated. She's being taken to a psychiatrist, but they haven't fully diagnosed her yet. And so I'm sitting there in home with my daughter, and 3 or 4 times this girl blows up, and I'm talking about in a complete redout. She's throwing stuff. She's like screaming and yelling at the top of her lungs, and we're trying to take the advice of the psychiatrist, which means don't respond. Be firm. Be firm in what you're doing. And so we do this, right? And 4 days after Thanksgiving, she's doing this, and I'm sitting, and I'm listening to it, and I'm praying, and I'm trying to hold my mud. And she walks up to her mother, and she kicks her mother. Then she slaps her mother. That was it. I blew up, and I grabbed her, right? For the first time in 30 years, I put my hands on another human being with anger. And I grabbed her, and I shoved her down on the bed. The next thing that came out of my mouth was, that kind of behavior is not acceptable. I learned that here. That kind of behavior is not acceptable. And then all of a sudden, the ringing of those words in my ear were, that applies to you too, Bobby. And so a sense of guilt came over me. And it prevailed for about 3 or 4 days. I spent time with my sponsor face to face. And I did some journaling. I did some writing. And I went to meetings and I talked about it. And that feeling wouldn't go away. But see, what I did is I had an opportunity to be able to go into that savings account and look and see exactly what had happened to me. What happened was that no matter what happened is that if I do the right thing for the right reason, and I was doing that for me, that eventually things would come out. I've got a program that allows me to be able to make amends. I got a program that lets me take a 10th step and look at the good things. The good thing is that I didn't hit her. All I was trying to do is just stop the behavior. And as I look back at it, it stopped the behavior temporarily. Not that it's going to be permanent, right? But it didn't change the guilt and the shame that I felt around doing that. And so I'm human. It took me a while to remember that I'm a human being. I learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous. Never once during all of these crises did I ever feel like I needed to pick up and use as the solution. I've been blessed in that sense. But I know that I'm not naive either. I know that the program of Narcotics Anonymous will stave off the disease of addiction for a while. But it will always come back in a different way. And that's why I really truly believe that I'm not done with all the crises yet. What's going to happen is I'm going to have to continue practicing doing the program in order to be able to practice spiritual principles. And that I'm forever grateful. I'll end it with this. I don't know how to pay back Narcotics Anonymous. I really don't. The way that I do that is I learn that it's important for me to be in meetings of Narcotics Anonymous, not just for me, but also for anyone else who's in there, because there were people there who were there before me. And that worked for me. And that in order to stay out of my own selfishness, I need to be there so that they can see that Narcotics Anonymous works. That's my responsibility. That first sponsor I had taught me responsibility early on. Come to a meeting 15 minutes early, pee before you go into the meeting, sit down, shut up, and do not leave before 15 minutes after. Oh, by the way, fill your hands with something at the end of the meeting. I thought he meant shaking hands. He was talking about picking up chairs and ashtrays and coffee cups, cigarette butts outside, right? I didn't know what he was giving me was the 12th step in action, right? Because I thought he was just a mean OSOB, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what he was doing was teaching me a sense of responsibility. And that's what I've learned here in Narcotics Anonymous. That you can get rewarded with all these gifts, but you have a responsibility, and that's to give back. So I want to thank James S. for throwing me under the bus. I want to thank Jay for calling me up and asking me if I would come. And thank you for letting me share.